You're listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio. I'm Beth Ruriak. NPR will have live coverage of President Trump's announcement of his nominee to fill the vacancy of retiring Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy at 6 p.m. Pacific time. It's on Cap Radio and at capradio.org. Congresswoman Doris Matsui stopped by our studio last week, and we talked about a number of subjects, including Justice Kennedy's decision. The Matsuis and the Kennedys share roots in Sacramento. They've been longtime friends, and members of each family have had Washington, D.C. career paths. So the Congresswoman shared some memories of Justice Kennedy's Supreme Court transition.
My late husband, Bob, spoke at his confirmation hearing and also was there when President Reagan nominated him. He came. In fact, Tony mentioned this to me, that it was a snowy day, and they called Bob to come to the White House, and Bob had to go through the snow to get to the White House to witness, you know, the President Reagan nominating him. The thing about Justice Kennedy is that he is a Sacramentan. He's a McClatchy grad. Bob went to McClatchy. Bob was good friends with Justice Kennedy's younger brother, Timmy. And there's a group of people in Sacramento, went to McClatchy. Tony Kennedy was one of them. Sacramento values, in a sense, of being part of a community, understanding what it means to make sure that the community is whole, you understand your neighbors. And he brought that to, you know, his career. And, you know, he's always somebody who believed in the individual rights. He was a Republican. He's a Republican. He's a conservative. But he also understood the human side of things, too. If you look at his career, I mean, I don't think he ever believed he'd be the swing vote. It happened to be that way. I think he took a lot of time deciding on what he wanted to do. Our family connections, I look at him and realize that, you know, he is really someone that Sacramento should be proud of. There were decisions that we didn't agree with, but a lot of the big decisions were so important to this country. My son, he was a clerk to Justice Kennedy, too. So, you know, it's like the time passes, you know? You realize, my goodness, he really deserves his time to do things with his wife, Mary. He will not stay still. He's still going to be very active, probably coming back to McGeorge from time to time. He loves that. And so, you know, he'll be in Washington. He has his home there. His kids are on the East Coast. But things have really changed. Now we have a challenge now because there's not going to be a Justice Kennedy on the court. And we're hopeful that whoever comes on the court might come with an open mind. We're not too sure of that, obviously. And that's the one reason why a lot of us look upon this with some sadness.
How intense will the battle be for his replacement?
Well, I think it's going to be quite intense. The Republican Party has been much more intense about the Supreme Court and when they have a battle than I think the Democrats have. But in this particular case, what happened to Merrick Garland when he got nominated last time, he didn't even have a courtesy of being able to visit with some of the senators, didn't get a hearing, and he was stalled. I can understand why the senators, Democratic senators, want to see if they can possibly have the American people decide on this by maybe not having this move as quickly as Leader McConnell wants it to move.
And not till after the election.
Yes, right. Because that was the standard that was put forth by the Leader McConnell himself with Merrick Garland. So, you know, we don't know where it's going to be, but I really believe if you look at the importance of the Supreme Court on health care, civil rights, women's rights, immigration, and in a sense of who we are as Americans, it's important. And I think the Democrats firmly realize how important it is. And I think that they're going to do what they need to do in order to ensure that they at least challenge and question what kind of justice is going to be there for as President Trump says in the next 35, 45 years. That's a long time.
Do you think the process should be delayed until after the November election?
Well, if I had it my way, I'd say yes. But I'm a member of the House, right?
Right.
The senators have a challenge there. You know, the Senate used to be a place where there's supposed to be much more collegiality. But I think it's been very difficult for senators who really like that collegiality continue. And I think there's one way to be open-minded about things. And if they listen to each other a lot more, it would be helpful to this country.
You're listening to my conversation with Congresswoman Doris Matsui. It was recorded last week. She was back in Sacramento for the holiday. And because it was almost July 4th, I asked her how she sees Americans today, whether she thinks the definition of being American is changing.
I believe today that people are confronting their beliefs, perhaps outdated beliefs, and trying to figure out where we go. And I don't think that's a bad thing. But I also believe that we should do it with civility and respect and understanding. Because many times when we talk with other people, listen, we find that we're more alike than not alike. I believe that's really the essence of who we are as Americans. We're always striving to understand and be accepting and trying to listen and, in a way, demonstrate hopefully the best of ourselves.
Will you share with me some of what you've been thinking and feeling during this time of families being detained at the border, families being separated?
This is almost universal as far as what most people feel as parents. We've all had the sense of, at one point in time, we're in the grocery store in a park, all of a sudden for maybe 1 or 2 seconds, you looked at something else and your child somehow escaped somewhere. You're just feeling like, oh my goodness, what happened here? And you find your child, but that sense of losing that separation and the child themselves, when all of a sudden they wandered off and they're crying and that fear of not having their parent there, that is universal, I believe.
Panic, actually.
It is panic. Yeah. And what I saw here, too, is I think everybody has their own stories and their own history. What I saw there was also, in a sense, not only the separation, but the fact that it goes against who we are as a country and Americans. And what we saw there with the apprehension of these people at the borders and the separation of the families and putting them in cages where they were separated because of the zero tolerance, then what's the next step, right? Because you still have to go through a process here. These people have to go through trials and all of that. So how long is this detention going to be? And then you see the pictures of places that they're going to place these people, these families, on perhaps military bases. And you looked at those places and they look eerily like some of the pictures I've seen during the internment. And you look at that and you think, wow, this is not a path we want to go down at all. How long is a detention? We never knew also in the internment, right? And these people aren't citizens, but they have every right to not be detained in that manner. And we even knew during the Japanese American internment, these were citizens, and yet they were detained. So if citizens could be detained that way, what about these other people who are not citizens or immigrants?
You have been open about your family history in the internment camp. For you in particular, is there a sense of connection with some of the children who have been separated? And I guess I've never heard from you specifically what your earliest memories or awareness were, what stories you were told about the very beginnings of your own life.
Keep in mind that for me, my parents were American citizens. They were not married at the time. They came from different places. My father was in Los Angeles. My mother was a little town called Reedley. And they ended up in the same camp. Ultimately, they met and they married. I was born in an internment camp in Poston, Arizona, at the end of World War II. So, you know, I probably spent maybe 3 or 4 months in camp before they were allowed to leave camp and went back to their home. So I didn't have any memories at all. And my parents really didn't want me to be burdened, I believe, by the internment, feeling defensive or any way not American. So we didn't talk about it at all. You know, we're all American. You know, we went to school and we participated in all the activities and really had an American life. And it was only until I really got to college, I went to Berkeley, that you started realizing and hearing about things that were happening or had happened. And you remember some conversations, but you felt that that was in the past and your parents never brought it to the dinner table. So we never really discussed it in a deep way. But I think my generation realized that this was not right. We're American citizens. And put into camps without a trial, without representation, was bad.
That was part of my conversation with California Congresswoman Doris Matsui. We've posted the bigger conversation online. It includes our talk about healthcare issues and her very prominent work on the Affordable Care Act. You can find it at capradio.org/insight. By the way, I did ask whether she thinks of retirement, and she said without missing a beat, "Nope, I'm going to keep going." This is Insight on Capital Public Radio.